The Literary Corner, Black Writers of the World, a series of analyses and interpretations of Black world literature. Today, our guest is Black American poet Margaret Essie Daner.
Poetry isn't white. Poetry isn't black. Poetry is individual, and it attained the creative height that makes it belong to mankind. There was a war, must have been World War II, and they marched to Claude McKay's poem, "If We Must Die, Let It Not Be Like Hogs." Winston Churchill, I think it was, said this. It came out of the loudspeakers to egg his men on to win. This is World War II. "If you must die, let it not be like hogs." You know Claude McKay? All right, read him. You see, so that poem wasn't white. It wasn't black. It was truth. It was individual expression.
Margaret Essie Daner, Black American poet and writer. Educated at Roosevelt College, Loyola University, and Northwestern University, Margaret Daner is a former poet in residence at Wayne State University, Detroit, and Lemoyne Owen College, Memphis, Tennessee. She's founder and director of Boone House Cultural Center, Detroit, and former assistant editor of Poetry Magazine. She's received many awards for her poetry, including a John Hay Whitney Fellowship. Ms. Daner's writings are widely anthologized. However, she's often been described as a communicating poet. Now to an interview with Ms. Daner and one of our regular analysts from the University of Wisconsin's Department of Afro-American Studies, Professor Sarah Fabio. At the time of our interview, Ms. Daner was experiencing visual difficulties. Professor Fabio reads her works. I'm your host, Brooks Robinson. Professor Fabio, you might start by introducing our audience to Mrs. Daner through some of her works and asking her some of the major questions you have in mind.
All right. I know that 1966 was probably a big year for you, Margaret, and that is the year that I met you. We were both in Africa for the first World Festival of Negro Arts at Dakar, Senegal, and I heard Margaret there reading some of her poetry with its African imagery and African themes, and I can say that she was very much appreciated by the international audience. What kinds of things did 1966 bring to you, Margaret?
1966 was a kind of rebirth in that in Africa I found so many of my friends on their native soil. I would walk down one street and there would be Langston Hughes, and there was Sinclair Drake, and there was Sarah Fabio, and many, many others, and we were all at home in Africa. And I feel that it regenerated the spark in us, and that we have come a much faster, higher pace because of the Senegal.
Right. I know that your involvement with Boone House in Detroit. Not only have you worked as a poet for many years in Chicago, but I know that you've worked in Detroit and also as far away as the Lamoine College environment in Memphis. Maybe you want to tell us about the kind of dues paying the poet has to pay outside of just writing.
Well, it is a paying of dues, except that to me, it was life. It was something that I wanted to do, and I think that I lived longer because I was doing it. I certainly did experience a much more sensitive way of life than I would have had I not been writing. The writing has thrown me into contact with people who were so highly sensitive in every city. Detroit is just full of beautiful people. Dudley Randall was there, and we did poem, counter poem, and he started his publishing press. And Naomi Madgett Long is a Detroiter. And, oh, I could just name many, many. And I had a little cultural center called Boone House that was sort of loaned to me by Dr. Boone, who owned so much property and so many homes. And this was his kind of parish house, which he did not need. And so the writers would all come. Bob Hayden came, and we would get together there and write and talk and freeze to death because I tried to live there. And the beautiful thing about it was the neighbors, the children, they would come by and drop quarters, and their parents would put a dollar or two in the mailbox and all because they wanted a cultural center there. And the atmosphere there for building of culture is very beautiful.
Yes, Detroit is probably one of the most supportive cultural places that we have. Not only Motown, and of course Motown has a big thing there. Aretha Franklin's father's church is there, and you have people like that. And then just straight up literary figures, as we said, Broadside, of which Margaret's first book, poem, counter poem, was published, was, and it was the first book published by this new publishing house.
Yes.
And, of course, Margaret has come a long way since the publication of this small, about 20-page volume that she shared with Dudley today when she's just published The Down of a Thistle, which is a large, fully illustrated, 140-page book.
Yes, but not really as large in my heart as my first little publication. Right. We worked so strenuously at it, and Dudley is such a taskmaster, and I am so flighty, and it was really quite an experience. And the whole Detroit was interested. It was their book, too, and Belle Isle and Green Man in Detroit, and all of these took part in making it a very sensitive session of my life.
I think Dudley described this business of two poets publishing poems on the same theme like is similar to a boxing match where you try to outdo each other thematically, right?
Oh, yes. And we were very, the thing that was so exciting to me about Dudley Randall is that he is an honest critic.
Right.
He said, "No, I don't like that." And I said, "Well, I don't like yours, and mine's better," and that type of thing. And that way we were able, I think, to hone our work to the extent that it was lifted a little.
It's interesting. Dudley is a librarian, and, of course, Anna Bontemps was also a librarian.
Yes.
And these people who can anthologize and can help get a large amount of the work of black people published seems as if the librarian is high on the list.
Yes, it might be good for poets to find librarian friends.
Right. They certainly read more than the general public.
Let me ask a question here, Mrs. Daner, and that is, what specifically do you try to do most in your work? Some artists have their own particular veins that they try to travel in. What's your vein? What are you trying to say?
What I try to do is contain myself to the writing of good poetry, because if I didn't do that, I would just write and write and write and fall in love with my grandson and write all kinds of cliches, which I did, about him. And I'd write about Sarah and I'd write about you. You see, I have to, my problem is to contain and to restrain and to, and I just love some of my cliches, you know, and I don't want to throw them away.
Margaret, if you don't mind, may I take the liberty to read a couple of your poems?
Please do.
All right. This one is called, "This is an African Worm." This is an African worm, but then a worm in any land is still a worm. It will not stride, run, stand up before the flutterbys.
Yes.
Okay.
Flutterby, yes.
Right.
Before they
the flutterbys who have passed their worm-like state. It must keep low, not lift its head. I've had the dread experience, I know, A worm can do nothing but crawl, crawl, and wait.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Yesterday, we had the experience of having a mural painted on a wall and a dedication to the mural. And one of your poems, just as our African ancestors did, is in honor of one of the early mural walls in Chicago, the Abbasi Wall in the ghetto, 1967. Mm-hmm. None have gained a loftier recognition through the medium of the arts from 400 B.C., than we chrome tones, we blacks. And here in Chicago, about five blocks from where I was born, we're again creating portraits of other blacks that we respect on a wall of a building that should long ago have experienced rejection. Finally, blacks are being reawakened to reclaim another spark in our incomparable heritage. We enfold again and hold and enhance and paint with all the colors of the rainbow to testify to our pride of stance and attest our love on this old brick wall, just as our forefathers so superbly did through carving and molding on stone, on wood, on iron, bronze, ivory, and gold.
Well, thank you.
Just as our African ancestors did. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Daner, as a writer, as a black writer of the world, what made you do what you did? Made you write the poetry that you've written and the other works that you've constructed and developed?
Well, that's difficult to answer. I began writing, I had an uncle who wrote, and I had a cousin whose book was published many years ago. He wrote. And these men that are in the background of my life, I wanted to do what they did, and I think that's what started me writing as a youngster. I was chosen a poet, class poet, because a poem that I wrote saying that I wanted to be a violin was received first prize. The first prize, the teacher said she loved the poem, so she gave me a violin. I didn't say that I wanted to own a violin, and there was awful screeching around. Mm-hmm. I said I wanted to be one. I wanted life to pluck my strings, which life did. And so that I think I began because there was this atmosphere there in the home.
And from there, you went on to write numerous
works. Oh, I began to write about boys. My goodness, you see, when in my teens, there were these marvelous boys, and I would write about them with all kinds of very strange imagery that was very bad. One had ebony eyes, and,
Yes. But it all turned out beautifully. You'd like to make any more comments, Professor Fabio?
No, we're just very pleased to have Margaret Daniel with us here at the University of Wisconsin.
Thank you. You can tell that I'm just tickled to be here.
You've been listening to the Literary Corner, Black Writers of the World, a series of analyses and interpretations of black world literature. Today you heard black American poet Margaret Essie Daner. Our operator has been Bob Cham. I'm your producer, Brooks Robinson. The Literary Corner was made possible by funds from WHA Radio, Madison, Wisconsin, a service of the University of Wisconsin Extension.